Well, good afternoon and welcome to the first Saturday of June on Woods and Water, South Carolina. I don't know how to tell you this or not, but yesterday was my birthday. Happy birthday to me. I am not telling you how old I am. I'm ancient. Hey, I'm glad you tuned in. You listen to Woods and Water, South Carolina. My name is Roger Metz. I'll be with you the next hour on 94.5 WGTK, The Answer, out of Greenville, South Carolina. It's going to be another good show. If you listened about a month ago, I had an interview with Brett McBride from OSearch. OSearch is the global shark tagging scientific data tracking and biological studies group that goes all over the world tagging sharks. And they were actually here in the low country called the Low Country Expedition. They were just north of Hilton Head Island. The day I was there, the wind was blowing 25 to 30 miles an hour. We didn't do any fishing, but I had a great time on board learning about all the science experience to do, how it affects mankind, how it affects the oceans, the fisheries, just a lot of information. So anyway, I had the Brett McBride interview played a couple weeks ago. I'm going to do Chris Fisher, who is actually the face of OSearch, so to speak. Really neat guy, just fun to talk to. I ran into these guys all over the decks the day I was there, and they were good enough to do these interviews. So the second and third segments are going to be the Chris Fisher interview. And it's really interesting. I want you to listen closely as he's talking about the science. And he's not a lot of these people that are in research, oceanic research and all, they're real emotional about the issues. And, OSearch is not what they're, let's do the science. Let the science tell us what's going on. And let's move on to another endangered species or another part of our environment we need to have some more understanding about. So he's different in that sense from most people that you'd expect to run into on an expedition like this. And in the end, and he'll say it in his article, in his interview that we do, look, I want my grandchildren to be able to go to the ocean, catch a fish, take it home and eat it. That's their goal. The sustainability, so everybody can benefit from it. However you benefit from the oceans, that's what they want. So it's just a real cool interview. I hope you enjoy it. Like I said, that second and third segment of the show, and it's good. I'm kind of toying around. They invited me to come up to Cape Cod this summer. We're in, I believe it would be August. I'm waiting on more information from them about when it's going to be. But the weather was so terrible down here, we didn't get winter until March, and which came crashing down right in the middle of their expedition. But they're supposed to give me information about the Cape Cod expedition this summer, where he said, it's great whites every day. And that would be really cool to be that close to a fish that weighs, 2,600 pounds or so, 14-foot great white shark. I don't know. You can find more about him at osearch.org, and we'll talk a little more about that later on the show. First, as we always do, let's get a few things off the calendar of events. And one of them is really neat in South Carolina. And this is somewhat to do with Woods and Water. It's somewhat due to our reconnection with our agricultural heritage. I think we've lost contact with, where does a steak come from in Bilo, or where does a chicken Ingles come from, or where does the corn cob you buy, that sort of thing. South Carolina, we do an Ag and Art Tour, which is really unique. It's Welcome to the South Carolina Ag and Art Tour, a free self-guided tour of designated farms in South Carolina featuring local artisans and farmers markets. During the tour, you'll have the opportunity to see firsthand where your food comes from, watch artists in action and purchase their works, dance to the melodies of bluegrass and folk songs, and learn more about rural life, which is where basically most of us used to live. The 2017 tour schedule actually started today and goes through tomorrow. It's in Chesterfield County, Darlington County, Florence County, and Horry County. Next weekend, June 10th and 11th, we're in Chester County and York County, which is where I'm from. June 17th and 18th, you're going to be in Kershaw County and Lancaster County. And June 24th to 25th is going to be Fairfield, Newberry, and Union counties. The 2017 tour is bigger and better than ever, coming to 11 South Carolina counties over 4 weekends. And these are all free. It's a great family thing to do. to get more information, because there's a lot to be had, go to, if I can read this here, I need my glasses, agandarttour.com, and it'll tell you, it has maps of where these farms are, what you're going to be doing, Farm to your table. You know, it's all about, you know, here's art to your home, on the road entertainment, and, you know, must visit. Said Chesterfield Farms is one of the places you got to go. Southern Eights Farm, a timber and equestrian farm with unique timber carvings. Pretty cool. So anyway, that's the Ag and Art Tour. It's very unique. It's something you need to do as a family because it's free and it's self-guided. If you're into quality deer management, you want to get involved, the Union County chapter, which is the High Cotton Branch, is going to have their night of fun, food, and fellowship at their first QDMA banquet. Food will be provided by Dew D Boots Barbecue. And, of course, you got silent live auction, raffles, games, and you know, all the stuff that goes along with a fundraising charity event like this. The date is Thursday, June the 8th. Doors open at 6, dinner served at 7. Location, Veterans Memorial Park Lodge, 322 Veterans Drive in Union, South Carolina. To get more information on this, go to qdma.com and look for events in your area. And back to the skies, and this is always a fun one. The Greenwood County Aviation Expo 2017 is coming, flying, family, and fun. This is pretty unique. This is June the 10th, and it's a little flipped from what a lot of air shows are where you have the morning and afternoon, and then everything's done. This one, it starts at 11. The gates open at noon, 12:30. You're going to have the EAA fly-in, general aviation aircraft arrival, military aircraft arrival, military vehicle arrival, car show, and then they got the jazz ensemble going. This one doesn't start really until 5:45, which is kind of neat. You got opening ceremonies, veterans recognition, national anthem, some demonstration. At 6 o'clock, the air show starts. So it's a little bit different. You kind of got a flipped. Most of them are wrapping up by about 4 o'clock. This one's just getting going. That's at the Greenwood County Airport, Saturday, June 10th. Check them out and get out there and look up. That's the neat thing about air shows. It teaches you to look up. Let's see. Let's get to, well, I guess we can get to this one. But they do so much. This is just one of them. Coastal Expeditions. I'm going to have to get down there because they do so much year round on the coast of South Carolina, whether it's kayak tours or just whatever. This particular one is a swallowtail, kites, alligators, warblers, and a secluded island. You travel through the ecosystem from lush bottomland forest through freshwater tidal marshlands, remnant rice fields into a marsh, salt marsh estuary where you'll find yourself on the front beach of a barrier island looking out across the open Atlantic. This is the Santee Delta. Santee was once a busy river teeming with commerce and human activity in the 18th and 19th centuries. It was a main corridor for Europeans, colonialists, and early Americans into the region, interior of the region, and this was the rice basket of the low country. Today, it is of the wildest and most scenic rivers in the south with Audubon-grade backdrops. The tour, Boat and Island, will follow the course of this great river as it slowly meanders and eventually opens up into the largest river delta on the east coast. Along the way, you'll have transitions from wetlands to backdrops to birds and other wildlife, remote river delta. Then you're going to go out to Cedar Island. You can self-explore this undeveloped barrier island beach or just lay the beach towels out and enjoy the sun and water. After a couple hours, you'll get on another boat ride, this time up the river and back into where we start our journey. This is going to be Sunday, June 11th, 10 a.m. to 2:30. It's $55 a person. To find out more, go to coastalexpeditions.com and check out some of the other stuff they've got going on. They are a busy bunch of people down there along the coast. So, again, as always with the calendar of events, this is just a place to get started. You know, there's tons of websites out there, SCI Way. You know, this is just a start. There's so much going on. Summer is here. It is time to pack up the family, throw the dog in the car, hit the road, back roads, mind you, and find something to do in South Carolina this summer. So, as always, the calendar of events is brought to you by Visit Anderson and Green Pond Landing. And having said that, I hope everybody at the Saluda River Rally is having a great time floating down the Saluda River today on the, what is it, the 8th? Great one. So anyway, hang on. We'll be back. Start the interview with Chris Fisher from O-Search on the other side of the break.
Well, say it again. In the 3 years I've done this radio show, I've gotten to do some incredible things and meet incredible people, learn some incredible things about the outdoors, which I thought I knew over a lifetime of being in. I knew a lot about. And the more I'm out here in this world of meeting people, the more I realize I don't know a whole lot. But I'm out here today, Osearch. We're Low Country Expedition. Fishing hasn't been great because winter finally showed up in South Carolina and the winds have been howling. They have had success. They've caught a couple of white sharks and a couple of tiger sharks. Actually got a male white shark, which is kind of neat and new for them and adds a whole new dimension to the research they're doing. But I got a chance to sit down with Chris Fisher. And Chris, thanks for taking some time to be on Woods and Water, South Carolina. And just take a couple minutes and tell us who you are.
Well, thanks for having me. It's good to be here. You know, I'm probably like a lot of people and kids who grew up here. I grew up chasing fish and frogs around the woods of Louisville, Kentucky. So I'm a Kentucky boy who really fell in love with fishing, recreational fishing, and being in the woods. And I was that kid who got dropped off after the school day, you know, at a bridge and scurried down a bank to a creek and then fished 4 miles down the creek and to the next bridge and got picked up there at dark, you know, by my mom with a couple of buddies. And really just fell in love with fishing and being outside. And so I think it was that love of fishing that developed in the woods of Kentucky and the creeks and rivers that led to the ocean, because my parents took us down to Marco Island, Florida for all of our vacations. And so then just kind of transitioned that love for fishing to the salt water. And then, you know, really kind of ended up in college and working and really lost fishing for a number of years, you know, because I went to business school at Indiana University and the National University of Singapore, studying international business, focusing on Asia and the Pacific Rim. We had a small family business at the time. And I was managing our work over in Asia. So I was commuting from L.A. to Asia 2 weeks a month over 2 weeks back, selling beverage equipment to Coke and Pepsi. And one day I came home, I was 29 years old, and my brothers and parents had sold the business. And I was like, oh, wow, what am I? I thought I was going to, this is my job forever, you know, what am I going to do with my life, you know? And so since I had been working so much for maybe it was school and work, it was, you know, really lost fishing for maybe 10 years, you know, at a really, you know, active pace because I was just working. I decided to spend some time and go fishing to think about what I wanted to do with the rest of my life and why was I here on the planet. And I was in Southern California, and I would come back from spending time on the water and talk to people about some of the wonderful things we saw and some of the scary things we saw. And people were like, okay, whatever, it doesn't matter, let's go out and have dinner. And I was just like, wow, if you're disconnected from the ocean, what about the people back in Kentucky?
Oh, yeah.
And then I started thinking about it. I was like, man, you know, when I was a kid, we had Jacques Cousteau. And there's no more Cousteau. And there's nobody that's really pouring the world's oceans into people's lives at radical scale. Yeah, there's some people trying to do some good, but nobody had achieved any sort of massive scale in the ocean space to create ocean on the brain at a big level so that all those people knew what was going on in the ocean, were aware of it, and then would, you know, they can't want to affect change if they're not aware of what needs to be changed.
Right.
And so the original noble goal was, man, we got to build an enterprise to pour the world's oceans into people's lives at a scale unseen since Cousteau. And that was back in about like 1998.
Outdoor adventures.
Yeah, so the natural place for me to start as a recreational fisherman was, okay, I'm going to start with a recreational fishing show, but I'm going to do it a little bit different. I'm going to take my family,
right,
my wife and kids, and we're going to go explore in one boat and go beyond where normal day boat fishing is. You see shows all the time where people just go in and out of a given place. This is like, no, when we went fishing for 2 weeks. We didn't come back.
That's right.
And we might fish from, you know, Cabo San Lucas all the way down to Acapulco, you know, over 2 weeks just moving and fishing. So you get to the really remote places and in-between spots.
Right.
And so that show did well. We ended up making 188 of those shows. It's called Offshore Adventures. And while we were making that show, I joined the board of the Billfish Foundation because we started to develop a little street cred in the recreational fishing community. And when I was on the board, I started getting reports from scientists who studied billfish at the board meetings. And then I would hear it, and I'm like, wow, my captain, Captain Brett McBride, who's on the water thousands of days all his life, right? I think he needs to talk to this guy because I'm not quite sure what this guy's saying is making sense to me. And then I suddenly realized that the practical world of professional and full-time fishermen was not connected to the academic space that was publishing the papers to manage policy for the future of the ocean. You see, you can't change the future of the ocean on a fisherman's story.
Right.
You need a peer-reviewed published paper. But most of the scientists have no boats, no capacity, and don't even understand how to catch what they study. And there was distrust between the science community and the fishing community. You know, one thinks this or that or the other. And I was like, wait a minute. We need to get our best fishermen fishing for our best scientists so we get the best data to make sure our grandchildren can catch or eat a fish. So knock off the individual agenda, you know, and let's just come together. Like, who can argue with... We'd all like our great-grandchildren to be able to eat a fish sandwich, right?
Right.
So that means we need our best fishermen helping our best scientists knock it off. We got no more time. There's no time. We've been trending the wrong way too long.
Okay.
And so when we were making the show of Offshore Adventures, we started to bring out the scientists who studied what we were catching and releasing, and we'd give them the ride on the boat for free. If you want to catch black marlin, take the black marlin scientist, shoot the show, step out of the way, do your science thing, let the fish go.
Right.
Sailfish just the same, and various other species. All of these scientists kept talking about this crazy shark problem we have. 100 million sharks a year being killed for shark fin soup in China. And then they would say stuff like, if we lose our large sharks, there's not going to be any billfish to catch. There won't be any mahi to catch. And then after the fourth or fifth one of them said that, I was finally like, whoa, what is this shark problem everyone's talking about, you know? And that's really how OSearch began. It was really just Offshore Adventures, trying to get our best fishermen and scientists together. I really started to get into making business and doing good at the same time, rather than just making business. It's a much more full journey. And that's just kind of how it organically occurred.
How did you and Brett get together then?
I bought a 48 Viking in, I believe it was 1998, and it was the first time that I had a boat that I could run by myself if I was just keeping it home, you know, or in the area where I lived. But, you know, at that time it was like, it goes back to that Kentucky boy thing and wanting to see around the next bend in the creek or, you know, what's over the horizon. And so I wanted to be like, man, I want to go down and see what Baja's like. I've never been. Cabo San Lucas in 1998 to me seemed like you had to drive off the edge of the earth to get there. And now we're traveling all over the world. It's wild. But when I decided to do that, I needed some help. And so I was like, oh, I'm going to hire a captain to move the boat, go down with me, be safe on these long offshore journeys.
Right.
And look after things while the boat's gone before it comes back. And so I hired this guy named Bill Seiler, who was an old-timer in Newport Beach, you know, the local guy. And he's like, look, I'll just help you get you down there. But then, you know, I'm not going to stay on this full-time, and I'll try to find somebody for you. And so we moved the boat all the way down to Zihuatanejo, just north of Zihuatanejo.
What's the name of that town just north?
Ixtapa.
Okay.
Ixtapa, Mexico. And Bill says, hey, man, I got this young guy. I think he'd be perfect for you. You're about the same age, great fisherman, free diver. You know, you love swimming and diving. Why don't you just hire this guy, Brett? Because, you know, I'm ready to come home. I have to get a boat down there, but I'm not, you know. So Brett actually went to the boat and started working on the boat before I had met him. And then one day I jumped on a plane and flew down there to go fishing in Ixtapa. So he was on the boat and he's been a captain of my boat.
20 years later.
Yeah, ever since. He's taught me a lot, you know. you know, he really turned us on to freediving, which has been just an unbelievable addition to appreciating the ocean. And he also really, I think, inspired and brought in this long-range fishing component you saw in Offshore Adventures. You know, rather than just fishing in and out of the same marina, that's not what we do. It's like, no, we're going on a two-week trip from cover 1,000 miles, and halfway in between there, you know, there's like no people and it's epic fishing. And so he really got us into the long range. I mean, you think about, we've had 28 expeditions at Osearch, but Brett and I went on about 80 two-week trips over the course of shooting Offshore Adventures. So we don't even talk about those like expeditions, but we were out at sea for 2 weeks at a time, 80 trips before the 28 big Offshore Adventures kind of exploration thing. But all of that time and work and energy and passion is what gave us the capacity to come into this space and really make a difference.
This space is Osearch, is we're on the vessel right now, is the way I understand it was a crab boat from the Bering Sea that somebody had converted and installed the lift to put their fishing boat in so they could go long range fishing, kind of like you guys were doing. You started bringing the scientists on and you saw the need for shark research, and you've been doing this for how many years now?
10 years now.
10 years.
Well, so they came from the scientists during Offshore Adventures, right?
Right.
They were the one, we got to solve this giant shark problem. We got to figure out where they're mating and giving birth, and we don't know how because they're so big. And we knew we couldn't do it with Offshore Adventures. We needed more capacity. We needed a ship.
Yeah, which you got. This is a pretty big boat. Tell us a little bit about the boat itself.
So the Osearch is 126 feet long and 33 feet wide. She carries 50,000 gallons of diesel, 7,000 gallons of gas, 7,000 of water, and sleeps about 20. The fact that it's a Bering Sea crabber is interesting because when we put the lift over the side, the reason we can pick up 70,000 pounds with so little list is because we fill all the crab holds with water on the port side of the ship and pump out the ones on the starboard side of the ship. And we actually move water around those crab holds to create ballast to pick all these giant things up out of the ocean. We could pick up a 35-ton whale for scientists if, you know, there was one that they needed to study.
And that's all just
air and water. Moving water.
Moving water.
Yeah.
Well, I hope you just enjoyed the first part of my interview with Chris Fisher. When we come back from the next segment, we're going to continue the other half of the interview. It's pretty cool. You hear the rumble in the background. The ship was actually on the sandbar when we were talking, and they had to crank up the engines and move us a little bit further off because the tide was dropping out. So hang on through the break. We'll have more interview with Chris Fisher from Osearch on the other side.
Brett talked a lot about catching the shark and all of that. Down on the deck earlier, you were talking about statistics and that you are a, let's remove the hysteria and the hype, look at what science and the statistics are telling us and move on. What have you found in 10 years about white sharks, tiger sharks, whatever shark you're doing, what are you seeing statistically?
Well, I think on the East Coast and the West Coast of the United States, they're starting to return toward abundance. So we got them moving in the right direction here. And I think when you talk to a lot of people up and down the East Coast, the fishing and the abundance of fish is better and better. I know, like in Florida, where I grew up fishing, the fishing is better now than it was when I was a kid. So we got good things going. You know, out in the Pacific where we started between 2007 and 10, we know where they're mating. We know where they're giving birth. We solved their life history puzzle. And the scientists have written up a portion of that. I think the biggest thing that's shocked us is things like these female sharks are not sexually mature until they're 20. They can only give birth every other year because they have an 18-month gestation period. They live to be over 70. The male sharks have a one-year migration because they can mate every year. They're covering much bigger ranges than we expected. I mean, for these sharks to swim 17 to 20,000 miles a year for is normal. We had no idea the ranges were so massive. Sharks like Lydia in the North Atlantic are totally blowing our minds because she's spending the majority of the winter up north. We thought it was like a, you know, move down south in the summer, up north, down south in the winter and up north in the summer. It's not that simple. They have incredible navigation capacity and an incredibly accurate calendar. They're in the same spots in their migratory cycle for the females every 2 years, for the male every year, because they're on a 1 year cycle. These sharks are popping up and migrating like 1,500 miles in a straight line right to an island in the middle of the ocean. How the hell do they do that?
How do ducks migrate at night?
Yeah, exactly. So yeah. When we're starting to see, like, there's big game trails in the ocean, these sharks aren't randomly moving around. There's game trails.
Okay.
And they're using the same game trails in each direction during different times of the year. That's what we're doing down here in Expedition Low Country. We're sitting on a game trail.
Okay.
Just like you would in the woods, wait for a deer to come by. And we're hoping that a white shark trickles through every few days. That's this time of year, northbound.
Northbound.
Right? And if you're sitting out here in November, you'd be trying to catch them southbound. So we've seen all sorts of stuff that we didn't even know existed that's allowing us to ask a lot of new questions now we didn't even know to ask in the past.
You caught a male, a mature male, which is one of two y'all have tagged?
In the North Atlantic.
In the North
Atlantic.
Yeah.
Mature male. Hilton is going to become incredibly important. He will be mating this fall. Where he goes will be a mating site. Now, the most obvious place for us to predict that he would go would be Cape Cod.
Okay.
Because that's where we believe one of the mating sites is. We're seeing, we caught George there, a mature male, in September and tagged him, first one ever in the North Atlantic, with a spot tag and full health assessment. So we think he's a Cape Cod shark, right? He'll return there and mate every year.
Okay.
In the fall and early winter. But Hilton may take us somewhere else. Because when we see in the Pacific, there's more than one mating site. You got the Farallones and you got Guadalupe out there.
Okay.
So we suspect that we're going to find a similar system in the Atlantic where they're mating up off Cape Cod, but there's likely a whole nother place. And I think Lydia has shown us where that place is just earlier this past winter and fall. I believe it's Sable Island off Nova Scotia. Maybe Hilton is a Sable Island shark, not a Cape Cod shark. Or maybe he goes somewhere else.
Totally different.
So either place he goes or wherever he goes will be a huge leap forward, because the mature male will mate every year. And
so you can, once he makes that trip, you'll know where he's going.
And then we'll be able to go there, and we should find more mature males and more mature females and be able to put out more tags faster. And that is going to be really, really interesting if it is not Cape Cod, Nantucket area. You know, when we tagged our first few sharks up off of Cape Cod, one of them was named Mary Lee, and she led us down to Jacksonville. And then we went down there and we caught Lydia. Lydia's been tracked for 4 years now. She's never gone to Cape Cod. She's been going to Sable Island in the fall and early winter. So if we get a big mature male go there, that'll really start to zero
in. You've got it. Wow. It's got to be rewarding. What's one of those fun things about O-Search for you?
You know, for me, I love the educational component with all the students being involved with the free STEM curriculum. They can track sharks and learn math and oceanography. It's all free and open source because they're the future resource manager. I love pulling off stuff that everyone says is impossible.
I love such as?
It's impossible to catch a 4,000-pound shark and study it and let it go alive. That's what they said back in 07.
And you've done it.
Over 100 times. You know, I like the business model and building a business that shows you can make it worth it for responsible companies and socially innovative companies to fund the work required to create an abundant future for the planet and create so much scale around it, it's worth it for them. You know, the people who fund us, they fund us out of their marketing budgets, because we're funding $2 million a year worth of work here, but we'll drive $60 million a year worth of earned in digital media. So they're integrating their brands into our work and the content around our work, and then it's a branding buy. It's not a give. It's not a donation. I'm much better. I'd rather create value and sell it than try to bum a few bucks off you. My brain just doesn't work like that. And so building an enterprise that makes it worth it for companies to create the exploration and data to move mankind and the planet toward abundance. I love the enterprise challenge and the business challenge. Because if we can do it in this arena, the model can be leveraged to approach anything that's important for mankind and the planet. I want to give the model away. So people who are passionate about other things can be like, oh, look at how they put this together to make it worth it for people who wanted to fund it to fund it. And so I love that enterprise side.
That goes back to your business background.
That's right.
Yeah. 5, 10, 15 years down the road, where do you see OSearch and what do you want to see it accomplish?
Well, the first thing I'm trying to do right now is give it away to the future. So I'm trying to make sure I got OSearch set up so if I die, it keeps going. It'd be stupid for this to end just because any individual died. So that's important. The second thing is that you're going to see the tracker go to a more comprehensive ocean tracker so people can be tracked. Turtles and whales and other fish migration, so that people can see the system coming together. Maybe a kid wants to learn his math chasing them, following the migration of a turtle rather than a shark. And then terrestrial components will be added to it, and it'll become, for lack of a better term, the planet tracker.
Okay.
Where we'll be able to turn the kids onto the woods or the water right through their phone, and maybe that'll get them out on it. Because right now, we're losing our kids getting on the water, and everybody's trying to drag them out there kicking and screaming. And here's what I'm saying. Let's pour the water in the woods into their device that they're actually consuming content so they can see how cool the system is. So maybe then they'll want to go out in it. Because what happens is these kids get out in the woods or on the water and it's like nothing's happening. You're like, you're kidding me? Everything's happening.
Everything's happening.
You just can't see it.
That's right.
So maybe if we show it to them where they can see it on their phone, they'll actually want to go out in it and see it, and then they'll be able to recognize it. Because back in the day when we were kids, man, we learned how to see it just because we spent thousands of days in the woods.
That's right. We weren't allowed to stay in the house.
And these kids don't do that. So let's put the woods in the water on their phone in their life where they're spending thousands of days so they can see how cool the system is. So maybe then they will actually go out in it. It's kind of the opposite approach, right? But you got to feed people what they want, where they consume things, rather than trying to twist their arm. And right now, they want content on their phone in the now.
Right.
And that's why OSearch is always in the now. The shark tracker's in the now. It's constantly updating. The social handles are in the now. They're constantly communicating. The content is coming out as we catch a shark in the now. Exploration in the now. Science in the now. Education in the now. And so I think when you look at the future of OSearch, you'll see a planet tracker pouring the water in the woods into kids' lives with a fully integrated curriculum of education so they become the responsible manager of those resources in the future. And hopefully we turn them on to it enough they get out in the woods. And, you know, we need 10 of these boats or 20 of these boats because we could be creating 10 times the data, 10 times sooner to start managing toward abundance 10 times faster.
And, you know, for as many expeditions as y'all have gone on over the years, the ocean's just a huge place. And one ship trying to cover it all.
It's not efficient enough.
It's not efficient enough.
That's why we need different types of vessels moving around the ocean faster. You know, and it can be smaller boats. You just ship around. And then we go in and we train the local people how to catch these big fish fast. Use the specially designed vessel. And then give it to them so they can just keep charging as long as they open source everything they do to the community and the kids. And then get another one made and fund it and send it to Australia. Go down there and train them and give it to them. And plant these boats all over the world. And then also share the model of how we're doing and go help the person who's studying the snow leopard. Wherever we have a data gap that's fundamental to move the system toward abundance and a lack of funding, you can leverage this model.
Well, I hate the weather hasn't been any better for you fishing here in South Carolina.
No, we're thrilled, man. If you would have told me to come down here and get just one white shark, we'd have come.
You'd have come.
And to get two and two tiger sharks, we have two projects, right? We have the Southeast United States Tiger Shark Project,
right.
And we also have the North Atlantic White Shark Collaborative.
Right.
So we push the ball forward on both projects.
Great.
And then the mature male of Hilton is going to be transformational. And then also that little white shark, 9-footer Savannah that we tagged and worked up, we don't have a 9-foot female, that kind of demographic or profile.
Okay.
in our current sample size for the scientist. So she's going to show us how the tweener white shark lives, right? She's like a tweener. She's, you know, she's 12 or 13. She's not going to be sexually mature for another 10 years or 8 years. And we need to understand how the tweener white shark works. And then what their life is like, so we can look after them. Because we got to help the baby ones when they're babies, the tweeners when they're the tweener. Once they get to be big, mature animals, they destroy most gear types they come in contact with. We just got to help them when they're younger.
Very cool. Well, like I said, we didn't get to fish any while I was here, but, man, I had a ball being out here. Learn, like I said, just almost too much to take in, but I appreciate y'all being here, coming to South Carolina. If you ever come back, look us up. Man, I'd love to get on another one of your tours where you're actually fishing. That would be great.
No, I'm sure we'll definitely be back. The people have been amazing. It's been a privilege to serve down here and in South Carolina, and you're always welcome on the ship. You come anywhere, anytime in the world, no problem.
Chris Fisher, thank you for being on Woods and Water South Carolina, and let's keep in touch.
Welcome back to Woods and Water, South Carolina. While you are listening to this show, I am hopefully weighing in five of the biggest bass from Lake Hartwell to win the Hooked on Hope Cancer Benefit Tournament. I decided it was time to get off the beach, and get in a boat and try to catch some fish. So it'd be interesting if you're interested at all. You can probably check the Facebook page, Woods and Water SC, and see how badly I really did. I'm fishing actually with Austin Bradbury from the University of South Carolina, Bass Fishing Club. We had a good practice back in April, which, won't do us any good today. But anyway, it was fun. It's a day out on the water, and any day out on the water is better than a day most other places. Like I said, I hope you enjoyed the interview with Chris Fisher. A lot of information there, a lot of background. I would love to get up there and spend another day or two on the boat with him and be a little more hands on, bring out some good pictures and who knows, maybe an interview or so. You know, I won't say that I got involved, interested in O-Search in 2012, but in 2012, O-Search tagged a great white shark. Mary Lee is her name. They tagged her off Cape Cod. She's a female, pretty impressive female. She, 16 feet long. 3,456 pounds. She was tagged on September the 17th, 2012. And, she has traveled since they tagged her. She has traveled 39,641.293 miles. Unbelievable. And I know all this because I'm on osearch.org and I'm looking at Mary Lee's profile and the pings. Now the sharks, when they have a satellite tracker affixed to their fin, dorsal fin, and when they come near the surface or break the surface, it sends out a ping to like a satellite, and it tracks. And I got involved because one time Mary Lee pinged inside the 526 bridge at Charleston. Now, the pings are not exact. They can be, you know, she was, for all intents and purposes, she was inside the jetties in Charleston. And that's when I started following O-Search and but from their website, it's a real neat thing. I think it's in real time. I think it's will suck you in, kind of speak, I guess is what I want to say. O-Search is a recognized world leader in generating critical scientific data related to tracking, telemetry, and biological studies of keystone marine species such as great white and tiger sharks, in conjunction with conservation outreach and education at a measurable global scale. And they go on to talk a little bit about what they do. But this is an astounding figure. In 2016, O-Search open sourced the data on the global shark tracker to 2.3 million users, achieved an annual global reach of more than 6 billion media impressions, a Facebook reach of 70 million impressions, and a Twitter reach of 134 million impressions. That's pretty incredible. And you don't do this without partners. Some of their partners, Costa Sunglasses, Yeti Coolers, Yamaha Motors, Contender Boats, One Cube. So, like I said, go to osearch.org, find out a little bit about them. Pick a, you know, they tagged two great whites, a young male and a female here in the Lowcountry Expedition, and track them for a while and see where they go. It's amazing. And they're trying to figure out where the mating areas are off the Atlantic seaboard and where the females go to calve their pups. So it's pretty cool. But you can read more about it. They actually have an education program, a STEM program with free curriculum if you're interested in that in your school or homeschool group or whatever. But it's just really cool. And, of course, you can donate there. You can shop for Costa OSearch material, you know, shirts and hats and all. Actually, I have a hat. I try to collect something from any of these places I go. So I have a Costa Shark hat, and I got Chris Fisher and Brett McBride to sign it for me. So kind of got my memorabilia from this trip. I hope you enjoyed it. I hope you get involved. And like Chris said, they're not – the world is ending. Let's look at the science, see what the science tells us, make our decisions, and move on. You know, it's a pretty cool outlook. Speaking of outlooks, we have a good one here in South Carolina. Stories from the Department of Natural Resources, May 23rd, 2017. Favorable forecast for 27 shrimp season. So break out the grills, the saucepans, the hibachis, whatever you'd like to do your shrimp on, because it's going to be a good one. Commercial shrimp trawling season opened May the 24th. And they say it's going to be a good one. So far, we've seen indications it should be a good year, said Mel Bell, director of DNR's Office of Fisheries Management. Of course, after establishing the opening date based on the condition of the resource, we have no control over how things will go. The success of the season will be up to the hard work of the fishermen and the environmental conditions they encounter throughout the year. Abnormally warm winters, and all have got them predicting high shrimp numbers in the spring. And, you know, it was a good year last year, too. And, boy, those white shrimp were good. So if you're a shrimper, you like to go down in the shrimping season, it looks like it's going to be good. If you just like to go buy some fresh shrimp from right off Shem Creek, or if you want to make the drive up to McClellanville and visit Carolina Seafood, they've got them. And I think right now they're mostly the big ones, the 15 to 20s. Those are 15 to 20s per pound, which are just, oh, man, those are so good. And they're local and wild caught. If you kept up with, I don't know, I saw this on Drudge Report of all places. Two men charged with harassment of wildlife. Two South Carolina men are being charged for harassment of an alligator after photos were posted online showing the men pouring beer into the juvenile reptile's mouth. Now, look, people, I don't care if you wrap your head or arms around the head of the guy sitting next to you and pour beer down him. Let's have a little more respect for the wildlife we've got here. And a story like this makes you want to turn these two guys loose with the mom for a little while and see what happens going the other direction. But anyway, I won't even mention the two guys' names. But look, you know, respect for wildlife, you know, it's enough said. I just thought it'd be interesting to throw that out there. Here's a good one for you. And I guess I've got time to get through this. The home of the Boykin. Now, this is from a couple months ago. It's actually due to Pine Grove Plantation, which is the birthplace of the Boykin Spaniels, up for sale after more than 100 years in existence. And it's just a good informational thing, kind of fun thing to end the show with today. Starts out like this, and this is written by, is out of Sporting Classics, which is, like I said, Sporting Classics Daily. If you're not a subscriber, you need to be. It's just a really good article. On a Sunday morning in the early 1900s, banker, businessman, and dog lover Alexander Lawrence White walked from his home along Main Street to the First Presbyterian Church in Spartanburg, South Carolina. Curiously, a smallish, brown, curly-headed dog began following him. Alec petted the dog, then entered the church to attend services with his family. When he returned, the dog was still there waiting. White befriended the dog, took him home, and named him Dumpy. Dumpy joined the well-cared for Chesapeake Bay Retrievers and pointing dogs they called White's Kennel home. Alexander thought Dumpy was a quick study and that he had much promise as a retriever, but with no time to devote, White shipped the dog off to his friend and hunting partner for master training. 130 miles southeast of Spartanburg, just south of Camden, lies a small community that shares its name with Alexander White's friend, Lemuel Whit Boykin. Here at Pine Grove Plantation, on the edge of the fertile hunting grounds formed by the winding, watery river, Dumpy found a home, and the Boykin Spaniel breed was born. Like the Boykin, Pine Grove Plantation is improved with age, completely remodeled and updated with modern baths and kitchens. Pine Grove is the epitome of a charming southern plantation home with just enough old and just enough new. Pine Grove Plantation, the Boykin, is the birthplace of the South Carolina State Dog. The Boykin Spaniel is located near Canman. And it goes through and talks about how much it is and all that. But I thought it was interesting that a curly-headed dog walking down the main street in Spartanburg goes to Canton and becomes the South Carolina State Dog. And interestingly enough, it must have been 90 or 91. A friend of mine at the time, we decided we wanted to go shoot sporting clays wherever we could across the state of South Carolina. So we took a week and we got on the road, and I think we shot 7 or 8 different courses. This was pre-marriage days, guys. I could afford to do this with the time and the money. One of our stops was Boykin Mills, and we shot with Mrs. Boykin, who was the daughter of Whit, and just a real neat lady. But I remember it because it was where we shot. The Boykin Mills Gun Club had just been obliterated by Hurricane Hugo, and we couldn't get in the woods. They had the new course was set up along the edge of the fields and all. Not only was it fun shooting Mrs. Boykin, but she, first time I ever shot at a Batu. Now you got your standard mini, you know, your standard clays, you got your minis, your middies. And for those of you who don't shooting sporting clays, have never shot it before, you're thinking, what is this guy talking about? Well, it's different size targets, thicknesses, colors, but a Batu at that time, you remember the old vinyl records, if you left them in the heat and they kind of warped along the edges. Well, a Batu was like a record, and when you threw it, it flattened out because it was spinning. So you could hear it, and then it just appeared as a line, and you had to be quick on the shot, but it was really cool. So anyway, there's your story. If you want to buy it, I'm sure it's still available. You got to have some money, though. Dumpy. Pretty cool. Well, that's another show. You know, I haven't done this in a while. Chuck Norstroke. Chuck has the greatest poker face of all time. He won the 83 World Series of Poker despite holding only a joker, a get-out-of-jail-free Monopoly card, a 2 of clubs, 7 of spades, and a green number 4 card from the game, Uno. So, good old Chuck. Hey, I appreciate you tuning in today. Fun as always. Hope you learned something. Got to make time to get out there this summer. Got to make sure you get on those back roads of South Carolina where it comes to life. Never forget that camera. I'll see you next week here back on Woods and Water, South Carolina. Hit me from so high, yes, I'm